It's Lucy Litch, and this is Tiny House Conversations. It's the Australian-based podcast where I interview experienced tiny houses, tiny builders, and adventurers in the tiny world so you can discover how to create, build, and transition into tiny life. Welcome back to Tiny House Conversations. Joining me on the show today is Riley Skeen, who's the Managing Director of Treehab Tiny Houses. Over the past 5 years, they've helped many Australians realise their tiny house dream. They work hard to ensure your tiny house is built to the highest standards and provides you with a safe, secure foundation to live your tiny dream. They're passionate about design, innovation, and most importantly, sustainability. And in this conversation, we talk about what makes Treehab unique and how they approach innovation, sustainability, and environmentally sound practices, the shift from Airbnb to long-term living with tiny homes. We also talked about the different demographics that they build tiny homes for, Treehab's tiny house models, their tiny home kits for DIYers, and how they customize their off-grid solutions according to your needs, and lots more. It was really great to chat with Riley and get to know a bit more about him and Treehab. So on to this tiny house conversation with Riley. Hey, Riley, welcome to Tiny House Conversations. It's so good to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
So I was saying to you before we started recording that I'd heard about you guys, Treehab Tiny Houses, for many years now. And it's, you know, been great to get you on the show just to find out a bit more about what you guys do and what you're up to this year. But before we dive into all of that, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background. How did you get into even building tiny homes, and how long have you guys been doing that for?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting question, Lucy. So we started the business back in early 2019. We did a lot of research during 2018. We never, ever intended to be building and selling tiny homes. It was pretty much completely by accident. I guess that's how things evolve. We come from our family, so it's a family business. I'm the managing director. We have farms out in Western Victoria, come from a farming background, dairy mainly. And we had all these amazing sites on the farms where we thought we've got to do something with it. What are we going to do? So we were originally thinking cabins. We had never, you know, tiny homes were big in America before they were big here. And we thought we'd build some cabins. Went around looking for someone to build them, and we couldn't find anyone to build them. So we thought that we would give it a go ourselves. We partnered with a builder, and again, never intended to build and sell tiny homes. Ended up, because of the area, the overlays, all that sort of thing, the council said, if you build it on a trailer as a caravan, we'll let you basically have it without a building permit. Thought, great. So that's how it evolved into being a tiny home on wheels and following the Australian design rules and all those sort of things to make sure that we were compliant as a vehicle and could be moved on the road safely. And then posted it on Facebook, early 2019, and someone walked into the little factory that we had, which is only a block away from where we are now, in Chelmsford Street in Williamstown North, and offered to buy it. And we went, oh, okay. Wow. And thought, all right, sold it, built another one, so on, so on, so on. And now this is our 6th year of actual building and selling. And it's evolved into quite a decent sized business by itself. And beginning of COVID, which was 2020, we finally got around to building our own house for the farm. And COVID sort of just, call it, get in the way. It was a great. We were getting probably a booking a week, which was a good case study for our Airbnb customers, which was a large percentage of what we were doing back then. And then it just, unfortunately, with COVID, open, close, open, close, open, close, we just decided to sell it. And we have never got around to doing it since. So that's pretty much how we ended up doing what we're doing. We're in our third factory now. Growth has been massive. We're looking to expand again this year to another premises. As I was talking with you before earlier, we've had a lot of new people start this year. So that's been amazing. The team's growing, we're growing. Yeah, it's all going in the right direction.
Wow, I love that story. I love how you had, I guess, talking about business and all of that is like solving a problem, and you couldn't find someone to solve that problem for you. So you created that opportunity for yourself, and kind of now look what's happened over the years. I love that. I'm imagining how really good it must have felt when you built that first tiny home and someone wanted to buy it, and you're like, did you feel like, oh, maybe there's something here?
The first one, probably not so much. The second one, I was like, oh, wow, because they were so close together. It was like we built a little 6 meter. We called it all of our tiny homes are named after native trees and plants and that sort of thing. So we got the wattle, the tea tree, the red gum, the banksia, et cetera, et cetera. But the wattle, not to confuse it, was now the tea tree. The first one we did was a 6 meter tea tree, sold that. Built a red gum. Red gum's a very basic single level sort of, sorry, single loft design. And it was just really basic, but it had everything that people needed, to live in. Like it had a good size living space for a tiny home. You could have a TV, a space for a TV, a decent size kitchen, like a 3 meter long bench with 9 function oven, cooktop, range hood, everything you needed, everything that most residential 3 bedroom, 2 bathroom houses have in a kitchen. It had, as well as a 1200 by 800 shower, which is quite popular these days. Back when we started, though, most people were actually buying them for Airbnb and the rental market. Whereas today, the last 12 months, we've sold one house as an Airbnb. So it's all moved towards full-time living. As you said, it's really solving a big problem that our country has. Hopefully I think we're moving in the right direction. I don't think we're moving in the wrong direction. I think people are, especially here in Victoria, are taking on board tiny house living in a positive way. And I think so many other states and councils hopefully will follow, but we're yet to see what happens.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that actually, because I know that it seems to be a common story, especially in the last 12 months, maybe even 2 years, that there was this move away from all this Airbnb and there's much more long-term living, just speaking to other builders too. And it's been interesting to observe that shift over the years, because I think I might have come across you guys initially at one of the tiny homes expos a few years back. And I do remember, because I was at the expo speaking to lots of different people. I think I was with Bryony from Part My Tiny House and helping her out at her stand, and just talking to a lot of different people. There were actually so many Airbnb people are looking at tiny houses for the purpose of Airbnb, and there was still long-term living, but not as much. Now, reflecting and hearing and speaking to people, as you say, and even just observing what's going on online in tiny house Facebook groups and people asking questions about, how do I start, or, what's the best builder and all of this, because I want it for my family or myself or me and my partner for long term. It's actually, I think, a really heartening thing to see, because it is in this reality of a housing crisis where some people, and it, breaks my heart, some people are living in their car or on the street or in camping grounds, and you even see that with small children and families. It's like, this is a serious solution. It might not be the only one or the thing, but it's a very big part of it. And if it means that you can have a structurally sound vehicle that's not really anything like a caravan, even though, people like to think that it is, and the whole trailer park vibe, it's built with structurally sound materials, as you know, like a regular home. If we can get people into small versions of this, like, there's a real opportunity here to sort of change things for people in all the ways. So I agree with you. I think that, you're heading in a really good direction as well. And part of what I find interesting and unique about you guys is you talk about on your website, that you're passionate about innovation, but also sustainability and environmentally sound practices and things like that. So I'm wondering if you're able to share with us just a little bit about how Treehab navigates that. How do you approach that and put that into practice?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that we're sort of, you could say, known for in the industry. And one of the big ones is steel framing. Some people love it, some people hate it. I can tell you now, when you're building on a trailer, weight is obviously one of your biggest concerns, biggest issues. If you're overweight, you're not insurable. Not only not insurable, it's quite dangerous to all those around it when it's being moved. 4.5 ton electric brakes are restricted to 4.5 ton in Australia. It doesn't matter if the trailer can take 6 ton, 8 ton, 10 ton. If they've got electric brakes, that's the limit. Doesn't matter if it's one, two, three, four, five axles, that is the limit. It would be amazing if it was 6 ton. In America, you can get away with 6 ton electric brakes. So making sure that if you're going to build on an electric brake trailer, you're underweight. So steel is 50% lighter than timber construction. So when the frame is one of your largest structural elements, making sure that it is not only strong, termite proof, because here in Australia, who knows where tiny home could end up long term, and a lot stronger as well. So all of our tiny homes actually come with an engineer's certification. So you know that you're getting a house that is going to last. It is built, it is checked by multiple people. Is so important. So the steel framing is also 100% recycled as well. So it's not only is it stronger, straighter, and engineered, it is actually recycled. We also use a product called Green Stuff with one, it's Green Stuff with 1F insulation. It's recycled PET plastic bottles. So it's more expensive than traditional fiberglass insulation, but it is sustainable. It's acoustic rated as well. So when you close the doors of a prefab tiny house, if it's next to a freeway, you can't hear anything. It's
Amazing.
completely insulated. And acoustic. Going back to what you were saying, though, about how, a lot more people are living in tiny homes now, we have just introduced a line of air-braked trailers. So they're 10-ton rated trailers. So the traditional 4.5 ton, which electric braked, is what most people know tiny homes and the like to be restricted by. These trailers, we can pretty much, within reason, obviously weight distribution is still a key factor. Having 40% of the weight forward, 60% forward of the middle axle, 40% to the rear or thereabouts. That's the safe balance for transport. But these trailers, they come in at about 2.5 ton empty, so we have about 7.5 ton to play with. So material is not as big a concern. Still important. On what material we pick because of movement and all those sort of things. But we haven't officially announced it on social media yet. So this is, you could say, sort of the announcement. But
Okay.
we've got one in the factory right now, 11 by 2.5. So that extra, most of our standard designs are all 8.4, except for our tea tree. We do a couple of smaller ones. But an extra, that extra 2.6 meters of space just in a tiny home. It sounds ironic because tiny homes are getting bigger. But when you're living in it, you got an extra 2.6 meters of space in your living room. That makes a huge difference, like massive difference. We're getting families now that, have $700,000 mortgages that sell their house, release the equity in their house, buy a between $100,000 to $250,000 tiny house. And live completely debt free, lease land or have family's land or however it works, or buy land and live on in the country. Or we've done tiny homes now on residential blocks in the city. That,
Really? Okay.
yeah. So it's
Yeah.
Victoria, luckily enough, is going in the right direction. We've had Surf Coast Shire, which is like Anglesey down
Yeah.
Geelong region, be really, really supportive of tiny homes, as well as Mount Alexander Shire, which is up Castlemaine region. They're pretty much the two in Victoria that were the early adopters of tiny homes. We're bang in the middle of the two shires. So
Amazing.
we've been building lots of tiny homes. It's good that the locals have been taking it up as well. Not only is the council said that they're supportive. The locals have jumped on board, and there's tiny homes everywhere.
That's great. Well, I think that with those two shires in Victoria, as well as one in WA, and then I think there's one in Queensland as well, just from speaking to lots of different landowners that have spare space, but are sort of, everyone's gonna be comfortable with different things. Some people are like, look, I want to go the route of doing the right thing and liaising with council, or what's council going to think of this? And other people are like, I don't care. Like, by the time we wait for council to catch up in our specific area, you know, in the meantime, there's people that could be helped with a roof over their heads. Yeah. But I have seen that when a council comes to the party, like these two in Victoria that you're talking about, it does provide that peace of mind to people that maybe they don't have to look over their shoulder or worry one day that the council's going to come knocking on their door, or, you know, have a tiny house person moved along, or just give them a bit of a hard time, or however that looks like. So I feel very hopeful that there's going to be more councils coming on board as they sort of start to see, this being taken up in other parts of the country, and also that they have such a big opportunity now to work with tiny house builders just like yourself to provide these solutions. It would be in the best interest of everyone, really, because then they're not going to have to deal with all this homeless stuff and people living under the radar and, you know, things like that. And then when you have, I suppose you're talking about it sort of more in suburban areas, but I think for the most part, people are living in rural properties. And then that brings in Australia, you know, we do have bushfire risks in many parts of the countries. And then if people are living under the radar, there's that whole thing going on of like, well, if they're not there and, you know, we can't provide them resources and, you know, flooding and all sorts of things. So I think in overall, it's like more councils coming to the party would be just beneficial for everyone. So it's really great to know, because I actually haven't heard that before in terms of tiny houses all over those two shires. Like, I know there's more uptake and all of that, but it's great to see that you guys are helping with that and building the homes down that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't say too much yet, but we are working with a lot of other councils as well. The main sort of issue that we've come across over the years, and not so much the last 12 months, but prior to that, is what is a tiny house? Is a tiny house a caravan? Is a tiny house a load on top of a trailer? Is a tiny house a skid cabin? What is it? They all meet a different classification. I think it all gets grouped into one classification in the council's eyes. So when people have called up the council and said, they've said, no, I can't put a tiny home on the block. Well, did you ask them what they actually think a tiny home is? And 9 out of 10 times they think a tiny house is a concrete pad, you know, a 60 square meter, two bedroom sort of house being actually built. And that's why they go, you need a building permit, it's going to drag out the process, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas the beauty of the tiny homes that we build and most of the other people that you talk to do is that it's faster, it's easily movable, it's cheaper most 99% of the time. And it's something that if you don't own the land, you own the house. So you can take it with you wherever you go. We have several customers that move regularly. We have a lot of customers that buy here, live in it for a while and decide they're going to move to Queensland and retire in Queensland. And they can't take the land with them, but they can take the house.
People weren't able to do that before, you know, many years ago, right? It's like if you're in a home, you kind of restricted to one spot and then you've got to move all your stuff. And look, if you do relocate with a tiny home, you still kind of have to do that, but you weren't able to take your home with you before. So I think that opens up a lot of opportunities for people to just create a really unique way of living and know that, there's flexibility and, it can come at a cost of having to move and all of that with towing and whatever. But I think there's something really cool about knowing, like even myself, I live in a tiny home. Like if I want to move at some point because my situation changes, like I can take, you know, my home with me, but at the same time, it's also an asset in it that could be part of a family, you know, or it could provide housing for someone else in the family if you want to live on the same piece of land or in someone's backyard or something like that for as multi-generational living, maybe an extension if there's kids or teenagers or whatever it might be, there's actually so many different options that you can use them for. And I'm curious, just on that note, like, are you finding that people, you know, we're talking about before with more long-term living now, are you finding different people are using it for different purposes as well as different demographics coming to you? Because I feel like there's so many more people that are looking towards this way. Like, once upon a time, it was mostly people that are thinking about, oh, I want to, you know, less impact on the earth, I want to live on the land. And there's still obviously people, you know, that's a big part of it and the financial thing. But there seems to be, like, I'm seeing people that are going through divorces, or maybe they're looking in to retire, or you know, expanding families and all sorts of uses and demographics. So what is it that you guys are seeing maybe in the last year especially?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I get asked a lot, like, what's your target market? What's your demographic? And it is so broad. It is based for the kids, full-time living, retirees, young people want to stay on the farm. We got one in the factory at the moment. It's a 18-year-old's birthday present, so she doesn't know she's getting it.
Oh, wow.
And it's purely so that, the you know, they live out in the country so they can keep her on the farm, sort of thing.
Wow.
I'd love to be adopted by that family.
Same.
but we've got a house in there where elderly mother lives by herself. So the daughter has bought the tiny house to put in the backyard so she can look after her mum. We've done people in rural areas that it takes them a long time to renovate their house just because the builders are in such demand, might be 3 to 5 years. They don't want to leave their farm, but their house is so run down. So they buy a tiny home. They can live next to the house while it's getting renovated. There's so many different things they can be used for. Tourism, of course, as we touched on earlier, but the last 12 months has been predominantly, you could say, single people retiring that want to sort of get out of the city and settle down, basically. Excuse me, somewhere a little bit quieter it's predominantly living in. Yeah,
and I guess downsizing too, and sort of just realizing I don't even need like all this space anymore for one person, or I don't need all this stuff anymore for one person. So like a tiny house just makes sense for a lot of people. I love hearing that. And you mentioned before as well about your homes being named after native trees, and you mentioned, you know, all the different names. Do you want to let us know a bit more about each of the models or anything that you'd like to share? So I know you said that, and it's very true, tiny houses are getting a lot bigger than they were before. I think often before it was like 6 meter and 7.2 meter, but now seeing so many more 8.4 and even up to like 9 or 9.6. So, yeah, whatever you'd like to share about the models that you guys have on offer.
Yeah, so we've got four models. We do a couple of them in different sizes. So our tea tree design, which is just your very simple single level queen bed, basic kitchen, no oven. It's sort of your Airbnb or short stay model, we call that. We do that a 5, a 6, and a 7 meter design. So that sort of was the original one that we built early on as an Airbnb. We then built the Red Gum, which is just our single loft, good size living space. The one I was telling you before, that it's got like a good size kitchen for a tiny home. It's got everything you need to live in, but it's stairs to a loft. So most people will live in that. We then have our Banksia. So our Banksia was our third sort of design, end of 2019, early 2020. It was originally a 7 meter design, very quickly became an 8.4, and it's a double loft with a downstairs bedroom. So if you really want to, you can sleep up to 6 people. It's got a queen bed at the front loft, king at the rear, and a double or queen walk around downstairs with a full wardrobe. And then we do that design in a single level only. So it is marginally cheaper if you don't need the two lofts. You still have a little storage loft in the single level. But that design sort of meets a lot of needs. We've had those as Airbnbs. We've had them as full-time living. It meets a lot of the different categories. That has been sort of our favorite. It's my favorite. There's a great video on the front page of our website by a Canadian YouTuber who just walked in off the street one day and said, can I make you a video? I said, sure. So worth a watch. It's a non-biased video that we didn't even know.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's our Banksia double loft. Yeah. And then our Mount Nash design was sort of taken from the Red Gum. So we had a customer come along and say, we don't really want the staircase in that area. Can we move it to the front? And then because the staircase was around the front, it sort of dictated where a lot of other things were. And then we thought, oh, we like the design. So we put it on the website. When it gets to custom sort of in the 8.4 meter range, we will do a little bit. We won't do a lot just because we don't want to sell something that is overweight. We want to make sure that everything is legal. We give, as I mentioned before, we give an engineer's certificate. We also give a weigh certificate, go weigh certificate. You get your electrical, you get your plumbing, you get your gas. So you can pass that on to your insurance company if they ask for it. To answer that question of do we do custom? Yes, a little bit. But then when it comes to the 11 meter range, because of that, because we don't have the traditional problems of an electric trailer, we can pretty much within the dimensions of the trailer do whatever you like. Obviously, there's rules and regulations we still have to follow on locations of your door and gas regulations and all those sort of things still have to be followed. But it's opened up a whole lot of different opportunities for tiny home designs. So some of those you'll see released over the next couple of weeks on social media. We're still finding our feet with the air braked sort of trailer, but yeah, we encourage people to come down and have a look at it in person because it's a big tiny home. Another sort of thing that has taken over, because we do all our own steel framing in-house and we have our own roll former, DIY kits have become very popular. So that has become not a main part of the business, but it's become a larger part of the business. So you can get a trailer, underfloor insulation, structural floor, and frame assembled. So all of your structure done, completely custom, any design you want. You can either sit down with us here or you can do a Zoom call. We've got a full-time architect and full-time engineer. Design it to how you want it. We give you a 3D model, a detailed frame group, which it shows you like where every stud, noggin, window opening is, and then complete it yourself. And with the kits, you can have as little as you want or as much as you want. So we can supply you with your cladding, your windows, flooring, you know, your tiles, or we can just supply you with the frame. We can supply you just with the trailer. So it sort of gives people the flexibility. And at the end of the day, you're always going to save money doing it yourself. There's no rhyme or argument about that. If you're putting your own labor in, you don't have a labor component, you're always going to save yourself money. At the same time, we do tell people that you should have a little bit of construction experience or know someone that does. Just small things. You don't have to be a qualified builder. There's small tricks, tips and tricks, and you know, knowing how to use power tools and things like that is important. In saying that, we've got some teenagers at the moment that are giving it a red hot crack, that are building their own tiny homes from Tassie to Queensland to Broome in WA. Kids are going absolutely all over the place,
which is amazing.
It's different. Yeah. We don't do so many lock-up stages. I know a lot of builders seem to do a lot of lock-ups. The frame stage has been the most popular. An 8.4-meter frame is $29,900. So that's your trailer, your underfloor, your floor and your frame. We've also developed a lightweight flooring alternative to standard yellow tongue and ply flooring. So it's only 2.9 kilograms per square meter versus yellow tongue that's around 12.7, 13.
Oh, wow.
So it's a 10 kilo saving per square meter. So in a double loft tiny home, that's between 280 to around 380 kilogram saving. That can be put into all sorts of other materials if you really want to, or appliances.
Yeah, and in a space like a tiny home, that actually it makes a lot of difference because you're already at those space and weight and height restrictions even in some areas of the home too. So that's really interesting. And I love hearing about the DIY side of things, because I feel like there's been this sort of shift in that too. I think what started out as very much a DIY movement, I think especially probably over in the US as well as Europe, but a bit here in Australia too, people like Fred from Fred's Tiny Houses, maybe 9, 10 years ago or something, it was like this DIY movement. And then slowly, slowly over the years, you're starting to see more builders come on board. And then I think sort of every month or so, you're hearing about more new builders and more new builders. And then it's like this big industry of it, which is, I think, in a way, it's also really great, because it is a sign that there's demand. Every builder also has their own style and what they their experience and skills that they bring to the table, and their unique aspects of what they bring to, and then obviously location. And so I think it just gives people so much, so many more options. And it's nice to see that, you know, the DIY is still sort of there, you know, alive and kicking there too, for people that want to go down that path. And also maybe for people that do want to save a bit of money, because the price of everything is going up, tiny homes included, but the price of everything when it comes to living is, you know, a big factor for a lot of people. And I'm just curious as well, just as you were talking, I was thinking about how, you know, we're talking about the different demographics of people, and you were talking about your models. Have you seen a shift or anything that's different that's happened in terms of the demand for loft tiny homes versus ground floor tiny homes? Because I feel like back in the day, even just a few years ago, lofts were all the thing. And now there's actually seems to be, and it probably a reflection of the demographic too, of more ground level models coming on board. So what are you guys seeing?
Yeah, look, you're probably spot on there. There's definitely more single level houses. There's still a huge demand for loft houses. All of the houses we've currently, except for one, all the houses we've currently got in the factory except for one are loft houses. So there's still a huge demand for it. The single level, because we're dealing with a certain floor space, like most of them around the 20 square meters. When you do have a ground floor bedroom, it does take up a large portion of the tiny home. Some people are fine with that, but the loft does really give you a lot of extra space. Like if you look at our Red Gum, our Mountain Ash, the living space is basically sacrificed if you had a downstairs bedroom. Our Banksia design, as I was saying earlier, how it can be used in so many different uses, so for so many different demographics. A lot of people have actually, even though it's a downstairs bedroom, some people have used it as offices, living space, cinema room, et cetera, and have upstairs as sleeping or vice versa. To answer your question, there's definitely single level has become more popular. Early, 2019 through to 2021, every single house we built had a loft in it. Whether it was a storage loft or a sleeping loft, it had a loft because it uses the space.
Just taking a quick break from the conversation to let you know, I'm now offering tiny house consulting. I get questions all the time about tiny house living and have lots to share from my own personal experiences of going through the design process of building a tiny, finding the right builder for me, living in a tiny home, as well as through speaking with guests on the show and beyond. So if you have questions about your specific situation and you want to dive deeper into where to start, preparing to transition into tiny living, how to find a parking space for your home, or talking through what some of the best options could be for you when it comes to creating your dream tiny life, just know that I'm here for you. You can head over to tinyhouseconversations.com/consult. I'd love to help you on your tiny journey. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, and I know for me, I have two lofts. One of them is a sleeping loft. And there is something really cozy and just different about, you know, I actually feel like it's the safe, it feels the safest and the most comfortable and cozy, and it just feels really nice to get into bed, you know, and there's a skylight and all that kind of thing. So I definitely feel like there's people that still want that option. And as you say, you're able to, I mean, you could potentially have two separate bedrooms upstairs if you wanted to, if you're going to use that space as a loft as well as what you have in the home downstairs. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious about as well, off-grid solutions is obviously a big thing when it comes to tiny homes for some people. For other people, it might not be they want to just be on the grid, or depending on what they've got accessible to them, where they're going to park their tiny. But what kind of off-grid solutions do you guys offer?
So we've worked closely with our supplier to actually develop something that is custom to tiny houses, so, and custom to what appliances we offer. So when a customer comes to us and says, I want to be off-grid, we don't just say, yep, this is what you, this is the one system we have, this is the price.
Yeah.
I ask them, or our team asks them, what appliances are you actually going to run? Give us a list, tell us are they gas or electric, et cetera. Do you have a budget? Because if you do have a budget around off-grid, we can do things like make appliances LPG instead of electric, which brings the total power usage down, which allows for a smaller system. So we don't have a one-size-fits-all. We've got three main systems, but we will change them accordingly to what is being ran. Some people just really, really don't like gas. Some people are really, really happy with gas. There's a bit of a stigma around LPG gas with, down here in Victoria, they've changed the rules around natural gas. So all new houses can't be connected to natural gas. And a lot of people just don't want gas. So we don't use any branded system. It's a completely custom made system, inverter, MPPT, you know, full roof of solar panels. We get as many solar panels on the roof as we possibly can. We don't just go out with six solar panels. If it's an 8.4 meter house, we can get eight-ish panels. It just depends. If you've got things like a pot belly or a skylight, it reduces your amount of panels. To answer that question, it's completely dependent on what the customer's got. We've done some massive systems with like 20 kilowatt hours of battery storage, seven kVA auto generators. You know, it's a 400 kilo generator,
wow.
16 solar panels. So we can go as big as you want or as small as you want. We can do super small, like 2 kilowatt inverters with like two Bosch AGM batteries.
Yep.
Back in 2019, we were using a lithium battery that, when it got below 6 degrees, it actually switched off. So we switched to AGMs for a while, and then there's now almost all, not everyone has built-in heating system for lithium batteries, or at least if the battery doesn't do it, the inverter will regulate the temperature in the box, because lithium batteries don't like the cold. They switch off to protect the battery. So we offer both AGM and lithium. Again, similar to gas and electric, some people love lithium, some people hate it. So there's options in both areas. The AGM batteries, they have the similar lifespan, but the AGM batteries are a lot heavier. They charge a little slower. Lithiums are lighter, charge quicker. So there's alternatives for both.
I love how you talked about it being a custom system, because that's another thing that I tend to see quite a lot were in tiny house Facebook groups especially, or even just questions I get asked from the podcast, and people say, oh, what's the best solar system I should get? And it's really like, well, it's got to be unique to you, because it's going to depend on what kind of appliances you have, how you're actually using your tiny home. You're going to be there full time. How many people are there? Are you going to be there part time? Are most of the appliances you're using, like, do they use a lot of power? You know, are you having an air conditioner? Are you using an oven? Are you using a stove? Just all these different things and then how are you using it and how often? So, because I know for me, when I was sort of doing this whole solar research on tiny homes and thinking about, well, what's the best option for me? Because, you know, you can put them on the roof, like what you're talking about, but there's also solar trailers. There's also like a skybox, which I'm sure you're aware of down in Victoria too, and just different systems you can have depending on, you know, what people need and maybe where their tiny house is positioned. Are they going to be in a shady area, or in which case they're going to maybe need it might be better suited to have something that is a bit further away from the home that can sit in, you know, a more sunny part and stuff like that. So I think there's just so many things that go into choosing the right solar for your situation. I'm curious though, do you guys do, like if someone did want to do solar trailers or something else that's not with panels on the roof, do you do options like that too?
We do. We have solar trailers. Again, same as whether it's on the house or it's on the solar trailer, it's completely custom. The only thing with the solar trailer is we can only fit 6 panels on there. You do have the ability to have a ground-mounted array of panels as well. So if you you know you're going to be stationary for a while and have the solar trailer, you can add like another 6 panels. It's just plug and play. We just had a solar trailer come back to us yesterday. Unfortunately, in the flooding, it washed down the river and yay. So, look, water rose so quickly they didn't get a chance to move it. But in most situations, the beauty of a solar trailer is you could actually move it out of the way if you were in affected areas. And same with bushfire. We did some in when were the bushfires bad? Was that 21, the bushfires, I think? We did some to... I think it was 21.
Yeah. Or was it 2019?
It could have been. Yeah, it could have been.
Yeah. Down here it was 2019, but yeah, it could have been elsewhere.
So we did a bunch of solar trailers to farmers around the fire-affected areas then just because they didn't have any power for months because it took so long because all the power poles burnt down. The solar trailer, similar to a tiny home, has got several different uses, whether it's emergency relief or individual power supply. Or the beauty of some of our larger solar trailers is they can power multiple tiny homes off one trailer. So instead of having 3 different off-grid systems on 3 different houses, 3 sets of batteries, 3 sets of inverters, 3 sets of solar panels, you have one trailer and you've just got to make sure that, you know, the cable you're running between the tiny homes is correct, or you get voltage loss over a certain distance. But if those tiny homes are all within a certain distance and you're using the right cable for those distances, you can save yourself a lot of money and a lot of potential headaches as well.
It's really great. And the fact that they're portable too, and, you know, you can also tow them just on like a, I think that they can be towed on 2 wheels, four wheels.
Most
yeah,
of them are under 750 kilos. So under 750 kilos, you don't need any brakes. So pretty much every single car with a tow ball can legally tow one.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. And I'm curious, Riley, as we're sort of talking today, you know, and I've spoken to many different tiny house builders and everyone sort of has come to this space from a different way, whether it's what you shared at the start of you sort of fell into it by accident and you know, you didn't intend to it, when then other people are, you know, they've been builders for a long time and maybe building, you know, residential or commercial or whatever it might be, and then crossed over into tiny homes. And, you know, just speaking to all those different people, everyone's doing it for a different purpose or what's driving them and what's behind all of that. And often it's more than just building a tiny home for someone, it's more than just providing this structure. I'm curious for you and what you guys do at Treehab, like what is the best thing for you about building a tiny home for someone and why do you do what you do in the bigger picture of things?
Yeah, well, I've always sort of lived by, like, if you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life sort of thing. Yeah. It sounds quite ironic, but a bit cliche, you could say. But I truly do, like, don't treat it as a job. I work all the time. And I just like seeing things go from, I've always liked building things, whatever it was. So seeing something go from a pile of material to a complete home, there's something about that. I can't really describe it. I really like it.
Satisfying.
It is so satisfying. I don't even know how many tiny homes we've built now. I'd have to work it out exactly, but it'd be well into the hundreds, or well over 100. Yeah. I don't think we would be near 200 yet, but it over 100. And all the different, you know, things that you can fit into a little house, it's got everything that a 150 plus square meter house has got, but in 20 square meters. So quite often the kitchens are the same size, the bathrooms are the same size as one normal residential bathroom. So when you're in there, it's a home for so many people. So yeah, it's a hard question to answer. Why I really, I just do.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough for sure. And everyone's different and there's no right or wrong answer at all. And I agree with you. There's something really amazing. And I spoke about this in another interview recently. And just for me, of my own personal experience of having a tiny built, and sort of seeing that process go from an idea to then a design, to then a build, to then it being delivered on site, to then moving in, and then to like living in it in over a year, and just that whole process from start to finish, and sort of how, I don't know, how it's all just unfolded into something really amazing, right? And you would get to see that from time and time again for different people, and building, as you say, like over 100 tiny homes now. And, you know, if people are sort of liking what they're hearing today and they want to, well, actually, before I ask that, you guys deliver around the country, and do you also have finance options for people as well?
Yeah, we do. We have a couple of finance companies we work with. So that can be applied through our website or contact us directly, and we can give you some other options. As simple as reach out over email or a phone call, and we go from there. If you're not local, if you're interstate, we can do a Zoom walkthrough. That's no problem at all. We do like people to come if they can, and get a feel and be involved as much as they can throughout the build as well. I try to be on the phone to people at least once every 2 days to try and keep them updated and come here. There's no amount of times, we don't say you can only come 5 times during the build. Come as much as you want, because it's a big investment. It's something that has to be right. It can't be rushed. It's a lot of people buy a tiny home, and that's they see themselves in that tiny home for the rest of their life. So, and the small things count. So yeah, so reach out, come and email, phone call, and come and have a look and see what we've got to offer.
Yeah, amazing. And so people can also, so they can chat to you along the process. You obviously do like a design meeting and all of that, and then do progress photos and things along the way too of like each stage of the build, and people can, and as you say, like maybe do video calls and they can and see where things are at too. Lots of builders do things very differently, but is it, you pay a deposit to get on the building schedule and then you're sort of paying it off in stages of the build being complete? That too, is that how that works?
Yeah, so it's a 10% deposit of the quoted amount, and then 4 even payments across the build once it starts. We do things slightly different to how a normal builder would do it. By the time the trailer is complete, an 8.4 meter build is finished and complete in around 3 to 4 weeks. Things happen quite quickly. That's with a standard design. That's not with anything custom. Because it's a standard design, all of our cutout lists are already done. Our frame drawings are already done. The engineering's already done. All those items it's pretty much pressing a button. The guys know that the guys in the factory too have got to know the design. So there's less checking plans, you could say. Once it starts, it happens very quickly, but there are 4 payments across the build. We're looking to change that to 3, just because I don't like sending a payment and then the 2 days later that's the next payment. Going back to the steel framing, the beauty of steel framing is we can have a whole house framed in under an hour. So by the time the trailer's complete, it's not uncommon for the frame stage to be completed. Underfloor insulation, by the way, is standard in all of our builds. So we've found that air circulation under the trailer just cools that floor really quickly, especially down here in Victoria where it's freezing 364 days out of 365. We had our hottest day yesterday, actually. It was reached 39 degrees here yesterday.
That's hot. Yeah, similar here too.
Now it's raining today outside.
Yeah, same. Can't pick it.
So underfloor, structural floor, and frame can be done in as little as an hour to an hour and a half. So that really speeds up the build process. And not only is it quicker, it's straighter too. So there's no straightening of walls required because steel is absolutely dead straight when it comes out of the roll former. It's 100% Australian steel, blue scope. It's got all the homes have a 50-year structural warranty. So they are built solid. They are built to last. They're built for Australian conditions. at the moment, we run off about a 3 to 4 month process to delivery. So by the time the deposit's paid, expect the house at your gate in 3 to 4 months. That does vary. We are building more display options or stock, you could call it, so that people don't have to wait. There's been a couple of situations over the last 12 months where people have actually been living in their car and need a solution ASAP. So we'll have that option available. We're also opening up display centers in a lot of states around the country. They'll be announced over the next couple of weeks. So that our customers don't just have to go on Zoom and do a Zoom consultation. They will actually be able to see tiny homes, our tiny homes, in person locally around the country. So by the end of the year, we're hoping to be in at least 3 or 4 other states. Yeah, it'll be exciting. Something different.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I think it's a smart thing too, because I know for me, and probably most people, if not everyone, there's something about actually standing inside and seeing it in person and imagining yourself, can I actually live in this space, as opposed to just seeing something online, which is obviously a good option to have if you can't really access somewhere local to you. But I think that's going to be amazing because, yeah, it does sort of bring, I think, what could be an idea and lots of questions about something, sort of bringing it to life and showing people, you know, is this somewhere that I can actually see myself living or my family, and even just like envisioning, you know, how they would lay their own home out and what it could look like and where everything's going to go. So I think that's really exciting. And where's the best place that people can come and connect with you online?
Yep, Instagram is best, Instagram and Facebook. And otherwise, just send us an email and we'll get back to you hopefully within 24 hours
with yeah.
a lot more information.
Yeah. And it's treehab.com.au?
It is. Yeah, treehab.com.au.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, Riley, just before you know, we wrap up the show, is there anything else that you feel like we haven't covered about what you guys do or anything around tiny houses that you feel is important to share and leave everyone with?
No, look, I think we've covered everything in important. Yeah, as I said, if you have any questions or want to reach out, just shoot us an email or phone call.
Awesome. We'll put a link in the show notes at tinyhouseconversations.com if they want to come and check you out on Instagram and Facebook and your website as well. And I just want to say thank you so much for your time today, Riley. It's been really great to get to know a bit more about you and what Treehab are doing. And thank you for what you're doing for the tiny house space and, you know, for helping out during this challenging time with housing. And yeah, thank you again for being here.
Likewise. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're listening to us at home, thank you so much for being here. Make sure you go check out everything that Riley and Treehab are doing. Again, those links will be at tinyhouseconversations.com. And stay tuned every Thursday for new episodes of the podcast. See you next week.
Thanks again for listening. And if you enjoyed the conversation today, you found it valuable and you want to support the podcast, the best way you can do that is to share the love. That way I can keep bringing you more tiny house conversations to help you on your own tiny journey. So here are 3 ways that you can support the podcast. Number 1, if you have a friend or family member that you feel would benefit from hearing these conversations, feel free to share it with them, email them, text them, send them a telegram, do whatever you need to do to share it with them. Number 2, if you hit the subscribe button, you'll know exactly when the next episode is live. And number 3, if you head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and review. Thank you so much in advance. I appreciate you, and I'll see you in the next episode.